The Athletic.
A deal has been agreed for MotoGP to come under the same ownership as Formula One under the Liberty Media umbrella. But what will this actually mean for MotoGP in terms of day-to-day reality? Is it good or bad news for motorcycle racing? And will it even actually happen? This is the Race MotoGP podcast. I'm Matt Beer, and to be frank, I want answers to all those questions because I don't have a great grasp on what is going on with all this and what it's going to mean. So hopefully, filling me and everybody else in are Simon Patterson and Valentin Hrinci. This is an extra bonus episode for you this week, listeners. As you might remember from last week's episode, we trailed the fact that we had an exclusive chat with Trackhouse boss Davide Brivio coming up. That is still coming later in the week, but the Liberty news is so huge we thought we should squeeze another podcast in first. So Simon, coming to you first, you've described it to us earlier as a bit of fan unease at this, not so much backlash, just a little bit of uncertainty. Why do you think that is, and what's your take on whether this is good or bad for MotoGP?
So right now, everything I can see and all the impressions I get from the fan feedback is that everything is being kind of skewed by what traditional F1 fans think. And we know that traditional F1 fans have not really been a huge fan of Liberty. The reasons for that, I've been like doing a bit of discussing on social media over the past 24 hours. And honestly, it feels like half of the F1 fan base blame Liberty for things that they're not responsible for, and the other half just don't like the fact that there's now a younger, slightly different demographic audience that has changed the sport that, you know, that they like. People don't like change, and it feels really like Liberty's number one mistake in F1 has been bringing in change. So that has kind of drip fed through a little bit to the MotoGP audience. MotoGP fans seem to, you know, not really know how to take the Liberty news right now, but they're hearing a lot of F1 voices that are, you know, that are sort of whispering in their ears. For me personally, I can't see any negatives to this. We're keeping the existing Dorna team, the people who know how to run MotoGP races and who know how to make good regulations despite a few blips with aero and stuff over the past few years. But what we're getting is this huge marketing entertainment operation that is going to essentially sit around the product that we already have. They're going to try and make MotoGP bigger. They're going to try and bring it to new audiences, bring in new fans. That's going to be, you know, more eyes in the championship, which is going to be fantastic. It's going to be a little bit more money in the pocket of teams, which is going to be really, really good, especially for some of the struggling teams. And it's going to bring, you know, MotoGP hopefully a bit closer to people who traditionally haven't been able to get that close to it. You know, I mean, North America is obviously a key target audience. We have a huge number of North American fans on the podcast, as evidenced by the fact that every time we ask for listener questions, I think about half of them come from the US. And if those fans, you know, get to be able to see more racing in person because there's two or three new races happening in the US as opposed to the five we currently have in the Iberian Peninsula, I am all for that.
You know, it is not going to be a knight in shining armor. It has not come to save MotoGP and to be its benevolent benefactor, investing into it for the good of the sport and the good of racing and out of the pureness of their hearts. Fortunately, that is not how business of this size works in the modern world. But that is, I see Simon raising his hand, and I think the point he is going to make is that previous plurality shareholder Bridgepoint was a private equity firm. So we've not really traded in that sort of regard. In fact, we've arguably switched to a more long-term investment plan if this Liberty takeover does come through.
Yeah, Simon is nodding.
Both Simon and I were in that investor's call. When I say in, listening in, not an investor. Neither is he, I presume. I mean, you can disclose otherwise, Simon, if you are, but I presume you're not.
that you know of.
That I know of, yeah. Look, The call was all about the financial returns of investment for the investors. It was not about putting on a good show. It is not the terms that it was being spoken in. So I think generally it is the instinct to mistrust a big business coming in to take over like a thing you really like, a product or a company that you've come to rely on. That instinct is almost always correct for me, because those takeovers very often do not come with quality of life improvements. They very often come with a squeeze on monetization, particularly of how much the chat is always of how much more can we extract the money from our customers into our pockets. That's unfortunately, you know, that's not really even bashing Liberty or anybody. That's just how business speaks about its customer base, unfortunately. And in Liberty's case, I am not super comfortable going to bat for a company that, you know, regularly takes decisions with more dollars than you or I have seconds in our lifespan, you know? It feels weird. All that said, Liberty has been an objectively good steward for Formula One. It has done, by all meaningful metrics, for the health of the championship, it has done it good. Since 2016, you know, none of the teams have folded. The coronavirus pandemic happened and risked knocking out like half the grid, and instead everybody's still there with valuations of north of $1 billion. Everybody is maybe rightly mad at Liberty and Formula One for not allowing a new team in, Andretti, who really want to come in. But the reason they're in a position to do that is because the current valuation of the current teams is mental. It's crazy. Like, they've made a Formula One that, for better or for worse, is in a position to reject credible new entries, which basically was never ever the case before, I would argue. The sport is more popular than it ever was. There is more demand than it ever was. The track action, yes, I think we'll get to this in a second, that you can have serious reservations about what's going on track there. But that's less of a Liberty thing in a certain sense. It is partly a Liberty thing, but less of a Liberty thing. And in terms of the health of the sport, they've done a great job. I don't think that's really meaningfully debatable.
Yeah, we've got similar backgrounds, Val, in having been Formula One people first, and our working lives are involved an awful lot of Formula One. And there is an absolute night and day difference between pre-Liberty Formula One and early era Liberty Formula One, I'm going to call it, because right now, you know, this is not a shining season for F1. There are some unpleasant controversies. There is very unexciting track action, a very predictable championship outcome. This is not going to be a glorious year. However, in the first part of Liberty's reign, you know, we'd lived through the Bernie Eccleston era of dire racing and lots of soundbite based controversies and a very backward looking championship. And then that changed into a championship that cared about entertainment, that installed some proper racing figures to figure out a new generation of regulations all about making a more entertaining on-track product, all about closing up the field. The reason some of that hasn't worked has been much more about teams making a mess of things in ways that Liberty couldn't really do much about. You know, Liberty's put in, with some FIA cooperation, put in rules to help struggling teams catch up. The reservation I have slightly is that I think F1 needed a lot more fixing when Liberty came in than MotoGP does at the moment. You can look at MotoGP quality of racing and go, ride height devices, aero and stuff got in the way. But in some ways, you know, a lot of the moves F1 has made to make its product better were following on from MotoGP doing similar. The F1 aero testing restrictions and sliding scale of them to allow slower teams more time to improve their cars is very much an F1 version of MotoGP concessions, which worked beautifully. So MotoGP's just rejigged its concessions, and MotoGP's already got regulations coming up that are intended to tackle some of the problems with the current on-track product. So it doesn't need as much rescuing as F1 did. But that said, I can't see Liberty's arrival as an objectively bad thing, because I just don't, the things people complain about Liberty for in F1, I mostly just don't see.
This is something that F1 boss or Liberty boss Greg Maffei said on the call yesterday that I think was really, really important. And it goes back to what Val said at the very beginning about a knight in shining armor. He very much suggested that while he wasn't, you know, while he was being careful not to criticize Bernie Eccleston, he suggested that MotoGP did not need a knight in shining armor the way that F1 did in 2017, that they don't need to fix this thing the way that it does. You know, MotoGP are already market leaders in how they use social media, as opposed to a championship that, it, you know, shunned social media back in the day. They have good, entertaining on-track racing that, yeah, it needs a few tweaks at the minute. We know what they are. We know that they were already coming before this Liberty takeover. So, you know, I don't think there's too much of a concern there. At the end of the day, again, without shilling for big business, I would rather have someone who has bought the championship with the intention of owning the championship for a long time and turning it into a really good racing product, as opposed to someone who's bought the championship to do exactly what Liberty or what Bridgepoint did and exactly what CVC did before them, where they try and make it more profitable, load it with debt, and then flip it for as much money as they can. I don't think that's Liberty's goal. I don't think they're here to turn this around. They're here to make this super, super profitable instead. And that's, you know, if you have to choose between those, I think Liberty are the lesser of those two evils by a long way.
Let's tackle some of the specific concerns, because I am wary of coming off as needlessly dismissive of people who are just understandably protective of the sport they love and maybe don't like some of the things that have happened to Formula One. One thing that I've seen a lot is specifically concerns over the future makeup of the calendar. And in many ways, this has come up in terms of Formula One's increasing reliance on street tracks, well, increasing, sort of increasing, which is obviously a misdirect in this case. MotoGP can't go to street tracks, and this has already been acknowledged by Liberty Media. Nobody's sending MotoGP to street tracks. But I think the part of it that's more relevant is the belief that in coming in, new owners will strip away classic tracks. So like, you know, bin off Mugello, bin off Assen, saddle them with like impossible to hit contracts, and then ship off those races to other shinier government funded tracks. Formula One history, recent history under Liberty does not support this. Like factually, it does not. I've looked at the calendar in F1 before Liberty's arrival, and the two tracks that you could in any way, shape or form describe as classic that are gone compared to then are Sepang, which, you know, it's a particular case, and a lot of people would dispute over how classic Sepang is exactly. I think we all like it, but
it's lovely, but it turned up in 1999. Yeah, to me, exactly. As a 40 something, that is not a classic. Yeah.
It's not Silverstone.
I prefer it to Silverstone, but it's not Silverstone in terms of history.
Yeah, fair enough. And Hockenheim, which already by that point the German Grand Prix was a rotational biennial race because the Nürburgring changed owners. So, you know, it used to rotate between Nürburgring and Hockenheim, then it just went to Hockenheim, and then it just disappeared. And Germany is, I think, one market where Liberty hasn't really meaningfully succeeded in Formula One as it stands. But, so you look at those two tracks, and then you look at the other classics that everybody cites that, you know, were often under threat in the media, and you look at them specifically, Silverstone. Right, Matt? You remember there was a lot of concern over Silverstone vanishing from the Formula One
for
calendar.
For years, almost 2 decades. Yeah. It was always every year a story. Its future was a story.
It's got a huge contract now.
There was a deal signed to go somewhere else. Donington.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It never happened, yeah. But there was a deal signed to go to Donington.
As we stand now, Silverstone rakes in the attendance every year, and it has a huge long-term contract. Monza, under threat all the time, now fairly embedded on the calendar. Interlagos. We all love Interlagos, all of us who watch Formula One. I think it's the quintessential Formula One track, like almost the most important one. There was a lot of like really awful talk about it being replaced by a Rio de Janeiro Grand Prix backed by Jair Bolsonaro, I think, or something like that. That's gone. Interlagos is now under a long-term deal. It's fine. Spa, still on the calendar. I don't particularly like it, but it's still there. Suzuka got a big new extension just now. All of those classic tracks are still in place. They have not gone anywhere. And they've added Zandvoort, which wasn't on the calendar, but which most people consider a classic track, and Imola.
Yeah, and the idea of Zandvoort or Imola coming back a couple of years ago would have just seemed, particularly Zandvoort, yeah. You'd never expected F1 cars to work there. But yeah, even with Max Verstappen's popularity, it seemed an impossible dream. But Liberty were like, there's the audience, we make this happen for that audience.
So because of this plus the new races, the problem is instead calendar bloat, which is, that is a valid concern. Liberty said yesterday that 22 was the right number it saw for the calendar. It was not going to try to push it beyond the current target of 22. But we also have to remember that even if you expect it to go back on its word in that regard, in Formula One, I think there's a lot of team support for expanding the calendar. Like, they're generally okay with it. They don't seem to mind. Also because of the revenue split, in a way, that also does help. In MotoGP, all the factories that you hear from do not want more than 22 races. KTM's on record as wanting something like 18, 17. I think other manufacturers have also never been particularly vocal in trying to push out more races in the calendar. And the way MotoGP governance works, you can't force them to do it because they'll walk. So you have to have all of them agree on the highest limit of number. Liberty would have to, if it even wanted to, which it says it doesn't, would have to pull out some amazing tricks to go beyond 22 for 27.
There's also the fact, well, for one, they can't go above 22 until 27. Like, that is locked in stone.
Yeah.
Because of the contract with Michelin, because Michelin are contracted to supply tires to no more than 22 races. But Michelin are also, you know, they don't want more races because they're already struggling. You know, they were like the first people in MotoGP to kind of go to like a two-team structure because they were struggling to get staff under French working regulations who could go to all the races. But Michelin are also MotoGP's single biggest sponsor. And if they, you know, if they extend their contract and they decide that it's 22 races, then it's 22 races for the longer term. They have the financial ability to make that happen.
But another thing that has come up a lot is, I mean, let's just put it under the umbrella of, you know, boring racing and questionable officiating, right? So let's just put it down as on-track matters. Some of that, I think, is like, I don't think it's fair to dismiss that as being entirely FIA that has nothing to do with Liberty. Liberty, as part of the people it has appointed to run Formula One, very much has a say in the rulemaking as part of Formula One's governance structure. And I think it can fairly be held at least partly accountable for having whiffed on some of the rule changes since its arrival. Like the 2017 rule change, I still really dislike, for instance. And the current ground effect rules... Well, the racing is not good, so whether that's the fault of the rules or just circumstances is a debate for an entirely different podcast. Don't worry about it. This is not happening here. But Liberty can... You can talk about Liberty when it comes to that. At the same time, unlike in MotoGP, where Dorna and the FIM feel extremely aligned in terms of what they do, they don't just feel like two hands shaking each other as they feel like the same person shaking left and right hand, you know? Whereas in the FIA and Formula One management relations, you do not have to go very far to see rifts and to see disagreements, specifically when it comes to, for instance, the arrival of Andretti. So, like, Liberty will gladly welcome BMW into MotoGP. Like, that's, you don't have to worry about that. That's absolute Liberty and the FIM and everybody else will be completely aligned over that. And, yeah.
I think, Val, you're absolutely right. Now, there's a reasonable amount of war going on between F1, as in Liberty, and the FIA. There wasn't at the start. You know, some personalities have changed along the way in the leadership of both that have contributed to that. From what I remember, they were fairly well aligned at the start. I can certainly see a very strong honeymoon period with Dorna and Liberty and the FIM to get things done together when this begins. Now, we said this deal has been agreed at the start. We didn't say it's happened. It may yet not happen. Val, why is it not certain to even go through? And what is the plan to make sure it does?
Liberty is very confident. It says that it will go through. And I don't think it would announce this if there wasn't at least a certain degree of confidence that they know what they need to do to make it happen. But there is the precedent that we always go back to ever since the Liberty rumors surfaced in discussing this, and is 2006, the European Commission for, what is it, Competition Commission, Anti-Monopoly Commission, not sure what the exact title is, but looking into the question of whether then owner of MotoGP, of Dorna, CVC, could also buy F1, which it was in the process of doing. And there's a, you can go look it up online, there is a fairly extensive EU Commission decision over what exact concerns they had in terms of the competitive realities of that situation and what the CVC agreed to do to make sure that those concerns were removed and that the deal was allowed to go through. And what the CVC did is sell Dorna, so divest its ownership in Dorna. Liberty obviously has no intention to sell Formula One. So as it stands, this deal is clearly fully with the intention of having both Formula One and MotoGP under the same umbrella, even under the same stock, basically. Now, why does Liberty think that that decision from 18 years ago, and I don't want to say decision because it's more, it looks like more of a recommendation at that point. It, like, if you read the decision, it doesn't look like something the European Union forced CVC to do in selling Dorna so much as it's just something Dorna CVC proactively did to make sure its F1 deal got over the line. Liberty says it has time to work through with the regulators. It feels that the landscape has changed meaningfully from 18 years ago. But its main argument, I think, is it has time, whereas it feels that for the CVC, the main task was just buying F1, and if MotoGP had to be collateral to it, well, so be it. Whereas Liberty, obviously, is buying MotoGP, but it won't do anything with Formula One, which is, yeah, obviously isn't going anywhere to any other ownership, as far as we understand right now. The details between that landscape and the current landscape, it's quite complicated, maybe outside of the remit of this bonus podcast, also because I can really even bore myself talking about it. But basically, they looked at a few ways in which, in 2006, having F1 and MotoGP under the same owner would constitute an unfair competitive advantage in terms of various things. And they looked at, like, negotiations with circuits, and they felt that was more or less fine. They looked at, like, potential TV package bundling, and they were like, this could be something, but maybe not. Let's see. But before all of that, they specifically flagged up free-to-air television rights in Spain and Italy, and negotiations when it came to that, and the fact F1 and MotoGP were major competitors on those free-to-air markets, filling basically all of the same niche, all of the same market, and how, if CVC owned both, it would be in a position to leverage that. Liberty says it has no intention to leverage the fact that it would own both Formula One and MotoGP, but also the free-to-air market, the way it was spoken of in 2006, unfortunately does not exist anymore. Both Formula One and MotoGP have moved completely away from the free-to-air model in most markets, unfortunately, and, you know, much of sports has done the same. So I can see why there's a confidence that that particular decision, the specifics of that particular decision, do not apply. I would still expect a pretty in-depth investigation over this matter, and a new, like, close look from the European Commission on what exactly the competitive ramifications would be. And then we go from there as to what they find, what their concerns are, what potential broadcasters' concerns are, etc., etc.
Liberty's entire argument, essentially, or part of it, was that whenever CVC bought F1 while already owning MotoGP, they had an opportunity to buy it right now, and they had to move right now to buy it. So they just did whatever the EU's initial brief investigation said. They just did that, which was sell MotoGP. That was a process that took 7 weeks. Liberty, you know, we're in the first week of April, and Liberty are talking about a process that's going to take basically that number of months to get this over the line, because they clearly feel like there's some room for negotiation. And I think we will eventually see a deal that has some, like, restrictions written into it. It will have things that they are specifically not allowed to do, things that they have to do. It might, you know, for me, the best thing that could come out of all this would be Dorna Liberty being forced to, say, divest World Superbikes and have that spin off into an actual competitive championship. Because if people are worried about you buying all of motorsport, then selling some of motorsport is a good way to say, no, we're not trying to monopolize this. So, you know, there are things that they will be able to do. There's deals that they'll be able to make. I think that things like the, you know, this perceived notion that they're moving towards more and more street racing will help, because they'll say, look, we're not going to the same circuits as MotoGP. We're not trying to monopolize the negotiation process there. I think that they are confident that there's enough that they can do to make all of these issues not issues, or to come up with some sort of an agreement, given the time to negotiate it, so that it doesn't present as much of a problem as everyone had thought it might.
There were two shared European Union circuits at the time between Formula One and all of Dorna's championships. And those circuits were Barcelona and Silverstone. And Silverstone there was an overlap with British Superbikes rather than MotoGP, but, you know, it was also cited. But in any way, that number did not bother the European Commission. Now the overlap between, let's say specifically F1 and MotoGP, is also two in terms of the European Union. It is, again, Barcelona, which I think a lot of us suspect may be in trouble in terms of its long-term Formula One calendar slot anyway. and Red Bull Ring. And obviously Silverstone is also there, but Silverstone is not part of the European Union anymore. So I don't know, would they have to, through a British competition authority, would they be asked to host one of the two races somewhere else? I don't know. I don't know if that would be something that would come up. But in any case, again, it's not a big number in terms of the circuit. So I think, again, if that 2006 thing is cited as a precedent, I think we're going to be talking broadcasters again. And the broadcaster situation is so different. And there are probably things that you can promise in terms of bundling and in terms of offering deals to different broadcasters. Right now, there's actually a lot of Formula One and MotoGP centered around same broadcasters in many countries. I wonder if that's maybe potential. There's potential for that to be broken up, whether that would help in any way. Still a long way to go. Again, Liberty's has set a target of getting all of these approvals over the line by the end of the year. So this is not like an instantaneous thing. You've not woken up yet in a world where Liberty owns MotoGP. It's going to be a process, as they've put it.
Good. Going back to the point earlier about Silverstone almost falling off the calendar. Imagine telling someone in 2006 that in 2023, the British Grand Prix at Silverstone wouldn't be an issue in this, not because it's not fallen off the calendar, but because we've left the EU.
Oh, gosh.
I think the TV deals, I actually think, maybe help support their case, because they're going to be able to go to the EU and say, look, we've already, like Liberty, MotoGP and F1 have already done deals with the same broadcaster while we're competitors. So surely we'll, be able to still do the same thing whenever we're not competitors, and it won't affect things massively. It might make things a bit cheaper for the consumer, et cetera, et cetera. It might not be the that big of an issue. It's interesting. The other thing that was interesting was where they actually said they were going to speak to the monopolies commissions, because it's not an issue in the US at all, but they highlighted, I think, the EU, the UK, Brazil,
yeah,
which ties with how much we know that South America is a massive audience for MotoGP, mm-hmm. or a massive potential audience, and Australia. And I think that's probably because Australia regulations are quite strict. But it also hinted that there's a push coming North and South America there, the fact that they went to Brazil about it.
One thing you can't argue with is that Formula One is a lot more popular post-Liberty takeover than it was beforehand. Now, Liberty's put a lot of emphasis onto entertainment, onto new markets, but also it did strike a bit of gold in terms of its Netflix series, Drive to Survive, really took off during the pandemic when it had more of a captive audience. And then F1 followed that with its best season in a billion years in 2021 in terms of on-track action. It was a really kind of a lightning in the bottle moment of a TV documentary getting thrust before a lot of people had a lot of time on their hands, and then the on-track product suddenly getting good. Has tailed off since then, of course, but I don't think you can underestimate that effect. Now, obviously, MotoGP is currently not as popular as F1. And you look at it objectively and you think MotoGP is so much more open. The racing is so much better. And you look across the rest of car racing. We get Formula E fans, IndyCar fans, with a lot of justification in some cases, saying our championship is so much more exciting than F1. People need to talk about it more, write about it more. If only it was on the BBC or something, then it would be bigger than F1. But to me, we're in the world of algorithms now. We're in a media world where you get fed more of the thing you like already, and it's very hard for anything new to break in. So while I absolutely want Liberty to find ways to put MotoGP in front of the bigger audiences it deserves, both in terms of watching it through TV, social media, and through being there at the track, this is a different challenge to what it was 10 years ago, isn't it? What do you guys hope for from Liberty in terms of growing the MotoGP audience, and what chance of success do you think it has? Simon, you go first on this one.
I think the challenge isn't massive, because we've got a very, very visually entertaining product. We've got short races, we've got on-track action, and we've got all the stuff that F1's got going on off the track that's made it so popular. We've got all that as well. Probably more of it, because we've got some really awesome characters. Like this could not have happened at a better time for Pedro Acosta to become a global superstar. The path is there for that. I think that Liberty need to find ways to get eyes onto this. And we're probably quite fortunate in that I think there will be a way that they can introduce an element of all of this into what they're already doing in F1. I mean, I want to see MotoGP bikes at F1 races. I want to see Fabio Quartararo cameos on Drive to Survive whenever he comes to hang around with all his F1 buddies. There's ways that this can be quite organically, that they can quite organically use this massive F1 audience to cross-promote to an extent, because at the end of the day, it's in their best interests to have eyes in both series. It doesn't strike me as a huge challenge. And I think that social media is going to be key. I think that hopefully the first thing we're going to see is MotoGP finally relaxing the incredibly restrictive rules around content creation that F1 have already done, and you know the move that they've already made on that. Because I can see, you know, more than Drive to Survive, I see fan content creation as being the thing that has really, really drove that to a new audience. So they know what to do. They know how to do it. It's not a Netflix documentary. Like, this is not going to be a make a ride to survive and MotoGP is going to be instantly an overnight success. It's not going to work that way. But I think that Liberty, people target fixate on the Netflix series, but Liberty have done so much more and they know what they're doing with it. So I'm fairly confident that actually it's not going to be that big a task for them.
Formula One has pulled this amazing trick over the last few years that I am still slightly at a loss as to how exactly it was done, because I, like, there's just a part of me that even if people show me hard evidence, it's part of me that really struggles to believe it's Drive to Survive, because Drive to Survive is not good enough to have that sort of effect. I know it happens every time it comes up. I'm sorry. I'll stop doing that. But Formula One has made people care about more than the top four and the top five or whatever. Formula One has made insane strides. That there are people who are now like ride or die for the 17th place driver in the standings. It is crazy. Like, I just, when I check my Twitter, that godforsaken website, and sometimes see what the algorithm serves me up, it'll be like the worst thing I've ever read in defense of some driver who's 19th in the standings, and it has like 2,000 likes. Every time it blows my mind, and I try to imagine that in MotoGP, because, you know, for better and for worse, and I think a lot of people are afraid that would be for worse in some aspects, and I guess maybe, but it's when you're at the big boy table, this is the kind of passion you generate for better and for worse. And, you know, as somebody who roots for a team of the English Premier League, it has been such a crazy experience to see that sort of interest and passion created in F1 up and down the grid, seemingly overnight out of, I don't know, it's just been crazy. And I want nothing more than for that to happen with MotoGP. And I think to start things off, it has to figure out how to make the rest of the grid as interesting as it really is to the outside world. And look, that's vague. That's not really a helpful answer, but that's what it feels like to me. For me, it is still unacceptable, for instance, that I still haven't seen the collision between Franco Morbidelli and Joan Mir, over which both were in quite serious disagreement. The fact that I haven't seen it suggests that nobody cares, but it's a vicious cycle. Nobody will care if you don't show it to them and if you don't show what the writers make of it. And it's okay for us, because then we get to report it without anybody having seen it. So it's a bit of extra business for us. But again, it would be better for us still if people really, really cared, which I think what goes on in MotoGP up and down the grid in every corner, it's deserving. But it's also interesting, and it's easy to understand. It is in many ways an easier to understand sport in Formula One than Formula One when it comes to races. You don't have to follow pit stop strategies, any of that crap. The lap times are very, very easy to parse at basically every point. It is a much more plug-in and watch type of sport. I don't know if I had the answer of what I wanted them to do. I mean, I'd probably have a different job that pays more. no disrespect. there is stuff to do, clearly. It's clear for me. Maybe also there will be people in the audience right now who feel that us talking up audience growth as the end all and be all from a position of the media is maybe not fair. And to a point, I do understand that sometimes you want your thing to be your thing and the perfect version of your thing, and sometimes, like, it's okay that Mad Max Fury Road only basically barely made its budget back or whatever, because it's the greatest movie ever made, and you'd rather have that than a movie that makes five times the amount of money but stinks. I get that, and I understand that, and that's the correct way to live life. But MotoGP as it is right now, it should grow. It deserves to grow, and that's my answer. It's a crappy answer. I hope that it grows. I hope they grow it. It's not really an answer to the question you asked, but hey.
So, first of all, I have absolutely no time for people, and I'm, you know, Val might think it's okay. I have no time whatsoever for people that try to gatekeep the sport. Welcome in all the new audience. We have been a sport for white men for far too long. There is a hugely passionate fan base out there that's growing, that's not that traditional demographic. Let it grow. It is good for the sport to be a more diverse, more open place. Can't wait for it. And it is going to happen because at the end of the day, Dorna have traditionally not been very good at all the sports marketing stuff, all the sports business stuff that comes around putting on a racing product. They have misstepped repeatedly. They have made terrible decisions, an awful documentary that no one watched in an attempt to copy what Formula One were doing. They don't do fan engagement. They don't send riders to events to do outreach, to meet fans. The manager of a MotoGP world champion told me a few years ago that one of the things that he hated most in the world is that he could walk down a street in Madrid or Barcelona with his world championship winning rider and no one would stop and ask him for an autograph, because that's not how it should have been. He should have been unable to walk down a street in Barcelona or Madrid. That, I think, that is not a big, difficult task to fix, because we have so much character and so much personality in this grid. It will mean that the riders have to work harder. But I think that the smart riders on the grid will realize that, like, the opportunity here is massive. I think that I remember reading that basically every driver in the F1 grid has more followers on social media than all but the top three or four in MotoGP. You know, there are people at the back of the F1 grid with 2 or 3 million followers on Instagram, whereas Pedro Acosta has like 400,000. The writers will, they're all massive egotists, like every racer is. They want to be global superstars. They want the extra money that comes with it. They want the recognition that comes with it. The smart ones will realize that a little bit of work now will set them up very, very nicely. It will make them a bigger fan base. It will do them good in the long run if they commit to it. And in turn, it'll grow the sport along with it.
I do realize that I've made a bit of a gatekeeping-ish argument, and I don't really like that. In terms of how it may have come across. So for the avoidance of doubt, any audience growth and audience diversification, extremely welcome. MotoGP needs it. It would be great for MotoGP. It would be, what we definitely want is we want to give all the people a chance to understand whether this thing is for them, right? To catch as many eyeballs as I can, and to catch people who can be fans and turn them into fans. And that would be great. And again, there is more people this sport deserves to be watched by more people. And I think more people deserve to be watching the sport, as weird as it sounds, even though we have our issues with it sometimes. It's just, I also understand the intuitive concern over, because it feels like every big business you listen to, it's always about audience growth, you know? It's always about the future fans, the fans that you might have, rather than the fans you already have. It does feel that way. I do, that particular impulse of it, I do understand. MotoGP is just not in a position to really be thinking about that impulse right now. Maybe Formula One's now in a position to where it can consider, you know, customer retention. And again, I hate to call them customers. Fans, people who have chosen to spend valuable, important minutes of their life watching your entertainment product. Again, this is, it's not a gatekeeping argument at all. We, absolutely 100% diversification and growth of the audience in MotoGP's case. And just generally, I'm pro. This was very defensive, but I just realized that, yeah.
Sorry, Val. I feel like I put you in this spot.
No, it's all right. It's good. It's fair.
Val, I understand your argument, because I don't think it's certainly not a diversification argument. But I do see the point that if you're a fan of something and you've kind of stuck with it through thick and thin, now there's two elements to this in my mind. There's the way I used to think when I was a teenager, if a lot of people started liking a band that I'd been taping off the radio for a year already, and now people had different opinions about it and they were like latecomers. I kind of dropped that kind of stuff in my 20s, but I do see why if you supported something when it wasn't big, you've got a loyalty to it. And maybe it spoils it a bit if people who you see as less knowledgeable or who didn't put the hours in to support this thing are now getting on board with it. I don't really follow that too much, but I can see how that is a valid opinion in some quarters. The one I do sympathize a little bit more with is people who have supported motorbike racing forever, and if they see changes being made to the sport they've loved and they've shelled out for the pay-per-view subscriptions, for the merch, for the ticket grandstand seats, and now it's being changed to attract a new audience and it's being changed in ways that don't appeal to them. I do see that 100%, but I also think everything has to change and evolve. And as members of the media, we see plenty of figures in our day-to-day work that show the disparity between levels of interest in F1 and MotoGP now. As people with eyes, we see the disparity in entertainment level between F1 and MotoGP. Yes. And those two graphs do not match. You put those two graphs next to each other, they look ludicrous. And so I think anything that Liberty or anybody involved in MotoGP can do to bring MotoGP more of the audience it deserves is welcome to me, even if it might change some things that I hold dear about MotoGP. To be honest, there aren't many. I'm quite pro change and evolution. I just don't care as long as there's good storylines.
I think the message to that second group of people that you talked about, as long as, you know, the parts that they want to hang on to are reasonable, assuming they are reasonable and assuming they are important, there is just no reason to believe Liberty would change those parts. There is no, again, like, it's the gut reaction of, like, it's all going to be street tracks with, like, I don't know, extreme pomp. The pomp is going to be there. The pomp doesn't matter. Pomp's not going to ruin the racing if there is pomp. Don't worry about that. Don't think about that. That's a complete misdirection. It's all about how easily accessible the championship remains and how good it remains. And it's really good right now, but the accessibility and the amount of people you can talk about it too is what could use improving, and that's what we want from Liberty. I don't, just again going back to that first discussion, I don't really see what it could ruin, and it's not because there's nothing to ruin. There's a lot to ruin. This is a really, really good championship, but I don't see any reason why it would. It'll either be a wash or it'll be additive, and if it's a wash, well, we've lost a bit of time, but so be it. And if it's additive, it's good. It's just good.
Well, I think for a bonus podcast, this has filled a nice amount of your week now. So we are going to go back to our schedule of Davide Brivio, followed by Carlos Espeleta for our next two interview episodes before the Grand Prix of the Americas, which I always start by calling the United States Grand Prix. Simon.
It's also worth noting that the Carlos Espeleta interview in the context of everything we've heard this week from Liberty is actually more interesting now than it was then.
Yes.
Because obviously he knew this deal was coming through when we did that interview. And there's a lot, you know, I'm going to go back and listen to that again because there's a lot of reading between the lines that I think we'll be able to take from that. But I think that this news makes that podcast even more exciting.
Yeah, no, that's what I was about to tell the listeners, actually. Just bear in mind that those episodes were recorded in advance of this news breaking. And so if you're wondering why we're not asking Davide Brivio about Liberty based, given his time in the F1 paddock, or we're not going into detail with Carlos Espeleta, it's because we can't use time travel, unfortunately. But both interviews and the topics they get onto, there's a lot of juice in them that works really well in the context of F1's owner also potentially becoming MotoGP's owner. There's some great stuff from Brivio about his time in the F1 paddock, both why it didn't work out for him personally and kind of how he sees the two championships operating. And when you come to it, it's worth listening to with this potential future under Liberty in mind. Thank you for your time on this one, listeners. Let us know anything you're concerned about in terms of Liberty potentially becoming MotoGP's owner. You can message us via our MotoGP-based social media channels at The Race Moto on both X and Instagram, or you can email podcasts@the-race.com. That's podcasts plural, with a voice note or email, with whatever your gut feelings are about Liberty coming in. And we'll get onto those in a future episode. We'll be back in your ears later this week with ex-F1 team boss turned MotoGP returnee Davide Brivio. Thank you for your time.
The Athletic.